I'll call what I guess we'll call a special meeting of the Trustees Candidate Advisory Committee to order. And let's just go around the room and let people know who's here physically in St. Paul for the two who are on the phone so far.
Let me go first.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Joe Aiken from Bemidji. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Marilyn Cathcart from Minneapolis.
Oh, Sally Olson, TCAC staff.
Kent Eklund, current chair from St. Paul.
Tim Hibsch from Maple Grove.
Janet Lexon from Lakeville.
Nancy Black from Minneapolis.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji.
And on the phone?
Liz Quapola from Evelyn.
Great. Good. Thank you. Here we go. We just got through introducing ourselves, so race in and introduce yourself. Two on the phone.
John Norton from Mankato.
Great. Welcome. My math tells me we're still at least one shy of quorum, and that's not a problem because we don't have anything official that we need to do. Someone else joined us? Hello?
Hey. Hello, this is Carolyn Williams.
Okay, Carolyn, welcome. We have, let me get the math. We got 8 here in person in St. Paul and 3 on the phone. The purpose of this meeting was to follow up the end of the candidate advisory committee process and just to give a chance to review the process and start doing a little brainstorming about ways we might want to consider improvement. Just so we're clear, we will not have a cycle in 2011. So our next cycle of appointments is in 2012. However, if we want to change or recommend any changes in the legislature, to the legislature, it would be in 2011. And so we wanted to have this conversation while it was still maybe relatively fresh in our minds, and talk a little bit about both the process and the candidates that we had this last year. So let me go to item number 3 or item number 2. You'll recall we had 18 candidates for the positions, and if you look at the back of the minutes, we sent over to the governor a total of 6 candidates, 2 from the 8th, 1 from the 1st, and 3 at large. So we sent a third of the pool that we have. So the first question I just would ask the group is to reflect on the quality. I think we know the quantity's down, quality of the pool of candidates, and more importantly, to think about how we might think about improving the total pool of candidates interested in looking at the MNSKU possibility. We had a marketing committee and a communications committee that sent out a long list of public announcements, made calls. We went through the legislative mail list. We went through some of MNSKU's mail lists. As you think about it now, general reactions to the process of recruitment. Any ideas for improvement? Or is it what it is?
Well, I think the gorilla in the room is that the process is seems like a decent process, but it's very hard to market a position to somebody when there's so little possibility that they're going to be appointed. Mm-hmm. And I think going forward, it would be difficult, particularly given the track record of appointments.
Just so you recall that in your files or on your emails was a listing of all of the appointment years from the beginning, 1991 when the Higher Education Board, and then the beginning of the Carlson administration in 1994. Other comments? Nancy?
Well, if you go back and you look at the board appointments from what Sally had sent us out, We don't have a very good track record except for Governor Ventura in this regard. And I think it's a very good year to be talking about this because Governor Pawlenty is not running for re-election, and this has become a highly politicized process for whatever reason. And I'm not saying that just for Governor Pawlenty. It is a politicized process. And there seems to be a lack of clarity for people who are applying in terms of the process. And the reason I say that is I think there's a lack of clarity on our part. And for example, I'm going to give like three examples and then I'll be quiet. I think I have three. One of them is it's unclear the status of people who are currently on the board whose term is up. What consideration should they be given? Should they be given preferential? As we look at the history and I look back, I see that, for example, in general, those who have reapplied have been appointed, but there are, of course, some exceptions. And in 2004, not only was Jim Loma, who was applying, going through the process again and was recommended, he was the chair of the board of trustees, a man with a lot of experience. So it's a little odd that we were kind of not giving a pass at all, but we were looking at that category of candidates in a slightly different way because we weren't sure if we should be giving them extra consideration. I think that's a fair statement. I think another issue is that, and I was hoping Carl was here, I'm in total confusion about the labor seat. And I don't think we ever successfully clarified that for all of us. And, for example, in the round in 2008, we have Louise Sundin, who did go through the process, who was not recommended, who happens to be a labor person appointed by Governor Pawlenty. And then we heard that this was, quote, the labor seat, because it was, I believe, legislated that there would be a labor seat. But that legislation didn't go through until after she had been appointed.
Right.
So it's kind of confusing. Is she the labor candidate or not? And I know we had a parallel process going on with the AFL-CIO when we made our selections. So that needs to be clarified. And I think what Marilyn Cathcart was saying is, I have to ask you, would you apply for this board? Would you go through the trouble of putting yourself up if you knew the results that had happened? And that's a hard sell. I would find it very difficult.
So you moved in.
Question.
Yes.
I would like to know how many terms should a board member serve? Because I see a lot of repeats of people who have served the board. And in the recent election, like Michael and these people, they were previous board members. And now they're coming back again.
There's no...
How many of the terms of office should people serve?
There's no legislative direction on this. On terms of office, so there is no legislative term limits. We've sort of been thinking that two's the max, but we haven't been around long enough to know if anybody would want to go for a third. So the answer is there's no legislative direction on that. Yep. Let me go back. Yes, Janet.
I concur with Nancy and Marilyn. I think Nancy can hit the nail on the head because I thought of this when the governor can do whatever they want at will. And we're like window dressing, to be very blunt, to make it look like an open process. And you're absolutely right. It's not fair to somebody who takes their time to come before us, who actually may think this is a very legitimate process. And that's what troubles me more than anything, because the bottom line is when the governor can still, if there's no teeth in who we present, and the governor can still appoint anyone they want at will, then, like I say, we're just like window dressing.
Mm-hmm. I think I can talk about the AFL-CIO, the second issue, Nancy. Mm-hmm. This was inserted in the TCAC legislation in 2008 or 2009. It was between the next to the last and the last review. It stated explicitly that in this cycle, 2010, there would be one of four seats appointed by a process run by the AFL-CIO, and that this would happen once every 6 years. So, but they also had the same freedom for the governor to ignore that their panel as well, which in this case our governor did. So the current legislation is, we think, that there won't be another side-by-side parallel until 2016.
I just want to clarify things a little bit in my mind. So are you saying, Kent, that one of these four is holding the labor seat or is representing labor?
No.
Okay.
There is no designated labor seat.
Okay.
There happens to be a person with a labor background who came in prior to the designation of a process run by the AFL-CIO.
Okay.
So I think possibly, and I've had no communication with the governor's office or anything about this, they said, well, they already have a labor seat in Louise, but it's not a designated seat. And so the governor did not take from the panel of four that the AFL-CIO sent on by April 15th, just as we sent our three.
So there was legislation that said in 2010 there was supposed to be a labor seat, but the governor...
No.
Okay.
Not so much a labor seat as a parallel process for recruiting, parallel to ours, run by the AFL-CIO.
Okay, so there was a process, but there was no outcome in terms of an appointment.
No.
So that's more window dressing. I mean, I know they didn't have a budget.
Right.
But it also is kind of bad faith to ask people to come together and to apply and then not have anything happen.
The legislation kept the same freedom for the governor to select from our panel or not for both the AFL-CIO one seat and for the three that we submitted.
And just so I think I know the answer to this, Ken, because I'm trying to wrap my head around all of this. The legislature and the governor did not increase the number of seats.
No.
Okay.
No. So in a sense,
thank you.
Every 6th year, mm-hmm. we have one-fourth less to do because we'll have one of our seats removed. If that's my understanding, though, 2016 will be the next time that would happen. Now, there are quite a few legislative sessions between now and then, so we don't know what will happen.
Mm-hmm. How did the AFL-CIO take it?
I have not talked to Carl. Not talked to Carl.
Okay, just curious.
Yep. Yes.
I didn't come here to say this, but I sat down and looked at the chart, and I just did a quick glance, and I'm not sure how to interpret all of this, and I'm not sure if I even counted correctly, but the question I just asked myself was how many of the people who were appointed to the board went through this process. And I started checking, and some of it is a little tricky because I see Michael Vekic served on the board and at one point, I believe, did go through the process. And I was a little surprised when I made my marks and then counted up the total. I wasn't sure how to count the people that were appointed to fill out a term either, which is a different circumstance. But my quick count, for us to mull over, was that I counted 24 people who were appointed who at one point or other went through the process out of what I took to be about 38 people. Mm-hmm. Am I right? Does that sound? And I'm, the quick math was that it's over 60%. Mm-hmm. So while I'm not happy with the fact that there are folks who could have gone through the process and shared a lot, because I think there is. Benefit just for the public discussion about trustees and all. I was the math, and however we want to weigh it, looked like a little over 60% of the people that have gone through the process have been utilized at some time and some under some circumstances. So I think the other question in my mind, and I don't know how we'd get at the answer, a little bit of what I would help me, because I too am troubled about just going out and telling people you ought to go through this, even though the governor might totally ignore the fact that an advisory committee thought you would be the best trustee that could ever possibly be appointed this time around. I think it would be interesting to know what the folks who went through the process who weren't appointed had to say about their experience in going through the process, because sometimes for people that, that is, I might not realize it, but there may be folks who feel that really was a time in their lives when they needed to kind of, stop and check and measure and think about what they were doing. And that would be at least something I think interesting for me to find out if I'm going to call people and say, you ought to do this or you should consider doing this. Why do I think it's worthwhile? And then it gets hard if I don't have some outside interpretation about what people think was worthwhile who went through it.
Did somebody just join by phone? Okay.
Hello?
There are still three. Okay. Other comments? Let me ask the question that was just raised. The fact that there has been 40%, roughly speaking, over the life of this, and in the last go-around 50%, has that affected individual board members in terms of your recruiting activity? Is it, you felt that it's not worth sending your best friends through this because there's the alternative process?
Well, let me say this, Kent. I have attempted to recruit people, and they have told me, good people, but they say, I don't have the political connections to ever be appointed. Why would I bother? Mm-hmm. It's not based on competence, experience, or expertise. It's based on political connections. Mm-hmm. And they said, I'm not going to apply because I don't have those. Mm-hmm. So that, I know it's out there at least for some people.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Nancy?
Well, if we just look at the last 2 years, we could go back, the last two sessions, we could go back three. But this was my point about reappointments. There were 8 openings. Only 3 were not reappointments. Is that correct? Benson, Rainier, Dixon, Pashkesh, and Hightower. So 3 outsiders, and all of those, quote, outsiders, not reappointments, were not recommended.
Not only did not go through the process.
Did not go through the process, yeah.
Cranky.
That's what I mean, yeah. Right. So it seems like a closed process if you're looking in at it. It's, and I'm not saying it is a closed process. I think people worked, hard on this. But what I'm saying is, after listening to Dave and listening to people I've talked to, the perception is it's a closed process.
Certainly, at least an alternative process. depending upon cycle, 50% or 66%. If you take the four complete cycles during the Pawlenty administration, in 04, one out of three. In 06, two out of four. 3 out of 4 in 08, and 2 out of 4 in 10.
And let me add something about Benson. He was appointed without going through the process.
First time.
The first time, and then the second time, he really didn't take it very seriously, if you want my opinion. Mm-hmm. He came late, didn't understand when the appointment was, came in pretty casually, and then got appointed. But it left a little taste mm-hmm. for me mm-hmm. in the whole process.
Yes, Nancy?
Just to add to that, I remember when we were reviewing his application, some members of the board, not me at this time, some members of the board did not want to pass him along because he had, I think, a two-sentence response to what was a very thoughtful question and that other people had written quite a bit about.
Mm-hmm. Is there any input from members of the telephone community?
I have this is Zainab Hassan. I have a question because obviously, I mean, the committee spent a lot of time in during the process and charged people who do apply and go through the process, and then it seems that 50% of the people don't have to go through the process. So my question is, I mean, what's the point of having a process that half of the people won't even go through it?
That's, I think, the nub of the issue. That really is. One of the questions that then therefore raises is whether we want to come up with a recommendation that we would take to a legislative leader in the 2011 session to change or at least have a conversation about changing the process. Yes?
I haven't done the numerical comparisons between MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, but the Regents process is a different process, and the decision is made by the legislature, mm-hmm. which certainly opens it up to a lot more people having input. And I wonder if we might not want to consider something like that.
It's an interesting that our process has been referred to in the last 15 minutes as having become politicized. The Regents process is politicized in capital letters. Mm-hmm. So I think it's sort of interesting that the original designers of MinSCU did not mirror the Regents process, mm-hmm. but came up with this process. Mm-hmm. And whether it's working or not is worth some conversation, but that is a heavily political mm-hmm. process. Yes, Janet?
I think the process in and of itself is working. The issue I have, and probably very unpopular, is if we leave this process in place, eliminate the ability of the governor just to appoint whoever he wants to without using the people we come forth with. Because, granted, I'm new here, but I saw a very fair process mm-hmm. Before the folks that were here, and everybody took it very seriously. Put a lot of work into it, but to me, the nemesis is the fact that the governor can still do what he or she wants. Mm-hmm. So my issue is not with the process, it's with that piece of it.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, go ahead, Carolyn.
I thought the process was a very good process, and I thought we reviewed the people very well and interviewed them good. We had specific questions that we asked them, and we do serve in an advisory role. And looking at this board appointments and this last situation, you know, we are up for a new chancellor of the system, And it is at the discretion of the governor. And I'm looking at the former people who served on the board. Maybe they wanted some continuity in order to be able to select a chancellor. And so as a council, we are still in an advisory role, you see?
That's certainly true. I mean, we've been there's been a capitalization of the word advisory in our title.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is Nimco. I mean, I'm trying to follow this conversation, and I know that, and you know, being new to the council, I think this is what this was kind of like my first process going through, like as far as interviewing. Folks to the board and things like that, but like it seems like, you know, the way I'm following this conversation, that people are kind of saying, well, what's the point of our, you know, council if, you know, if we can't even put folks through? And I thought that, you know, that we were just an advisory council, and if we even put two people through, that should be a plus for us, because at the end of the day, what I understood was it was the governor's position to actually appoint whoever he wants, whether we actually give him a recommendation or not.
That is correct. That mm-hmm. that describes current reality. And I think one of the questions that's being raised by some of the colleagues here is that a fact that the governor has discretion to go off of the panels that we submit for each open seat hurting the ability to recruit good candidates, hurting the process in and of itself? And I think that's really the nub of the issue.
And we have to realize in the advisory role, but we also realize he's not going to be the governor. And what we need to do, whoever is the governor, we need to have a meeting and talk about this with the incumbent who's going to become, or the person who's going to be elected.
Nancy?
I don't agree with that, Yvonne, with all due respect. You said, if I understood you correctly, it's a little hard to hear you. You were saying that we should talk to the next governor about the process since we're only an advisory? I don't think so. And as I look at this, one of the things that really disturbed me was we ask usually the chancellor or a member of his staff to come in. And we say, chancellor, tell us what you need on the board. There's 12 members. Every now...
It doesn't select them. The governor selects them.
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct. My point is, when the chancellor comes in and says he needs diversity, and the governor ignores what the chancellor is saying, I don't think the governor is acting in accordance with the chancellor, who certainly knows the system, the Board of Trustees, much more intimately than the governor. I don't want this to be a political process. I want this to be a process that has more openness to it. And I think that maybe I'm just politically naive about what's going on. But when I look at who we appointed this year, you know, we talked about Dwayne Benson, the reappointment, who didn't go through the first time, and Tom Rainier. These are good people. I'm not saying they're not good people. What I'm saying is, and then the two outside people, what I'm saying is, it's not according to the process that we, as an advisory council, really have set up. And I think while we're an advisory council, one of the questions we need to confer with a governor, could be Governor Pawlenty, although he doesn't have too much time left, with a governor and the legislature, the way the Regents has the legislature involved, is what are some of the parameters? And by that I mean, can we please, one, straighten out reappointments? You know, the question was asked, can they serve an unlimited number of terms? Well, if I had to serve 3 terms, 18 years on the Board of Trustees, I'd hang myself, but that's me. There could be somebody who could contribute a good deal and want to do that. But I think we need to know that. I think that we also need to know, for the sake of people who are applying, I know I would want to know, do the incumbents have a recognized edge? Now, that would, to me, that would be important. We need to be, I think, a little more upfront. And I'm so glad, Carl, you're here, because we talked about... Wake up. because we did talk about the AFL-CIO seat, and I think we have to, this committee, the advisory committee, has to be clear on what we are interviewing and what the parameters are. Not that we're telling the governor. I think the governor, whoever that governor is, can choose whoever he wants. But I want to know that the process here is fair, and the governor, whoever the governor is, knows that he is accountable.
Before you came in, Carl, we were asking, Carl Crimmins has come in for the telephone group, to give us a little bit of reaction to how the AFL-CIO felt about the process and, more importantly, the end result.
As far as the AFL-CIO is concerned, they're looking at the statute now. They've called the Senate leadership and the House leadership for a ruling, because the statute was only enacted last year, and it said that the governor is to appoint one from that list, and they submitted four names to the governor, and none of those names were selected. So now they're going back to the statute and to the revisor's office, or wherever their legal action committee is, and asking them for a definition on why that statute was not followed by the governor in these last appointments.
I thought I recognized language in your the AFL-CIO amendment that was parallel to ours, that the governor still had the opportunity to...
Yes, Sally just said that the...
He could ignore.
He could ignore.
He could ignore.
Right. Yep.
So that's why we were looking at that language, to see if there's something leadership can do in the House and the Senate this next legislative session. I mean, it's been our... I don't know if I should expand any further, but it's been our opinion that the governor appoints this panel. So that's the governor's duty to select this panel. Once this panel is selected, the governor should abide by the panel's choices. He shouldn't select this panel and then select other people again. It's like he's dual selecting here. He selected the panel. He can select anybody to sit on this panel that he wants. He's got the panel he wants.
You mean the candidate advisory committee?
Right.
The candidate advisory committee is selected by the House and the Senate leadership, correct?
Right.
It's confirmed by them, but the names are put forth. Isn't it put forth by the governor?
No. Oh. I think it's a third, or half. Half by the House, half by the Senate. The members of the Trustees Candidate Advisory Committee.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, I take it back then. Yeah. I was under the impression we were selected by the governor's office.
Yeah.
Because when I submitted my application, it was to John Byrne at the governor's office.
But then it's farmed out to either the House or the Senate.
Okay.
Yeah. Nancy?
Just to clarify, because I was under the impression that we were appointed by the governor. And that might be different than selected, Tim? I don't know.
I guess my thought, the appointment of myself here was by the Speaker of the House, not by the governor.
Yeah, mine was.
I thought so.
Right, yep.
Okay.
Sally, you want to just...
No, you're not appointed by the governor. You're appointed by the Speaker in the Senate.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I know that the earlier it was raised that... whether the advisory council can meet with the governor. In the history of this council, would there ever a trustee committee like ours that ever met with the governor? Do we know?
Not during my tenure. I've met a couple of times with the staff just at the beginning of the cycle. Did not this year, this cycle. So... But the council as a whole, as Nancy says, we've invited representatives of the governor's office, and sometimes they show up and sometimes they don't.
Okay.
So, yep. Yes, John?
I'm thinking another then, and we've kind of talked around it or alluded to it, but I'm thinking another key question would be, is the legislature happy with what has happened in terms of our work and then the governor's response? Because we're really the creation of the legislature to forward names on its behalf to the governor, and I would think having the higher education committees take a look if they choose to use their time to review and say, is this working the way we wanted it to work? Are there guidelines? I can imagine that. The politics of trying to take an ounce of power away from a governor are just really difficult. Further, I think it would be worth the discussion to see if they're happy with what their advisory committee has experienced in terms of what we're talking about.
Yes.
And I think in particular with reference to the actual language of the statute where it says, in selecting appointees, the governor must consider the needs of the board of trustees and the balance of board membership with respect to labor and business representation and racial, gender, geographic, and ethnic. And I think if you look at the statistics, it's readily apparent that gender and racial and geographic composition are off balance.
Not in the back, yeah.
Well, so that's one specific action that we could take as a committee today is that to be available for legislative vote review of the TCAC and the process in the 2011 session. We could see that. Again, to my knowledge, that has not occurred.
Is that a motion?
I can't make it.
Oh. Did you get that, Sally, of what was said? I don't know if I can.
Well, the idea is that we would be we'd be ready and willing to participate in a legislative review of the TCAC and the whole appointment process to the MNSCU trustees.
I'll move that if I don't know if there's a second.
I'll second it.
Second. Any discussion to that?
I was hesitating because I wasn't.
He said I didn't hear it.
Okay. That you want to repeat it, Sally?
Okay. That the TCAC is open to having the legislature review the TCAC process as well as the appointment process in the 2011 session.
Right.
But by the nature of us being formed by the legislature, won't we always be open to being reviewed?
I think that's true. We're opening the door a little wider and say we'd be willing to participate and see. We have a little thing called an election between now and then, and we'll see who the leadership is. Janet?
Would we want to, to your point on open, would we want to change that to request?
Amendments in order if you want to amend the proposal.
Have her read it with request. And what is the first one, Sally? I'm sorry.
The first one is open to a legislative review of the TCAC appointment or the TCAC process as well as the appointment process. The second one would be request the legislature review.
I'll accept that as the proposer.
Is there a second on the amendment? Replace open to request. Seconded. Any discussion on the amendment? Is the amendment clear to the phone group? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the amended motion now is to request a review by the legislature. Tim?
Just a point of clarification. Just want to make sure we can and we have quorum and have official status to do.
We do have quorum with the members on the phone. So. Are you ready to vote? Yes, Joe?
Oh, well, I still have some discussion I'm concerned about.
Okay.
But if it's appropriate that we wait until the vote, I'll wait.
Do you want to discuss the proposal or more discussion
about
the
process?
Well,
the subject at hand, basically.
Okay.
Should probably take place now, right?
Yeah.
Should probably do it now.
Yeah.
Well,
before the
vote. Do you, a motion would be ordered to table the vote until further discussion.
Table the motion.
Or we could vote on, then we can continue to have conversation.
Okay.
Vote now?
Vote now? Okay.
One of our members has left the room.
We still have a quorum with the phones on, the people on the phone.
Good.
Yep.
And they're here.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. I'm real chair rule that we've got a motion to the
I
woman.
I got out of, my phone got cut off for some reason. I don't know.
So we're voting on the motion to request the legislative review in the 2011 legislative session. We've voted. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. We will make that request to it. Okay, now further conversation.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have I'm in total agreement with the comments that have been made regarding the process and the unilateral appointment, and I think there's a degree of I want to say almost disrespect by the candidates who put effort forth. Disrespect by the people and candidates that we have tried to convince to come forward to us and take time and money and educating themselves and so on. But, you know, I think there's a fine line between the governor's prerogative and disrespect, which equates to discouragement of anybody applying. So it's kind of a round robin kind of thing, Mr. Chairman. And I have two questions. Is there anyone from the governor's office here or in the audience?
No one in the gallery raised their hand.
And then my next question would be, our communications committee, is there anyone here on that subcommittee, our communications committee?
Anyone here who's on the marketing communications committee? Tim. Tim was here.
Is the governor or his office or John Burns or whomever aware of our dissatisfaction, for the lack of a better term, and disappointment, and what are we going to, how are we going to address that? And I think is basically the question here.
Right.
Today.
In the past, the communications committee has been mainly focused on getting the word out to the public about the process, not necessarily in the communications between this committee and the governor's office. That's really been up to the chair and staff to handle that in the past.
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, the governor could come in or his staff and say, it's my prerogative, I'm doing it this way, blah, blah, blah. But what about the geographic, the gender, the diversity, the geographic location? Where does that come into play?
I believe the geographic is by statute. Then you have to, it breaks down, so that one is pretty well set to my knowledge.
One per congressional district, so eight are geographically spread, and okay. Then four at large.
Well, then, personally, I wish the makeup of the board was different.
Of the current board of
trustees. Of the current board.
Right.
And it's going the other way, I hope we're on the right track, but I feel I'm failing the people I represent are supposed to be representing or encouraging to apply, and what can we do about it, if anything?
Right. Janet.
Mr. Chair, Joe, I think that was one of the reasons we just voted on what we voted on. It's finding that avenue to, and the appropriate people to express some of our frustrations to see if we can make appropriate changes, at least open up the discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, we have no guarantees. You know, a governor's office can say, you know, we'll do what we want to do. But I think what we're doing right now, it goes right to your point. We're opening up the discussion to, you know, express, you know, some of our thoughts and experiences.
You know, we may be advisory, but we still deserve a degree of respect.
Absolutely.
And consideration.
Absolutely.
As well as the candidates who have interviewed and the potential candidates.
Right.
And the general public.
Yeah.
You know, that's
Question,
yes, Tim?
Question on the candidates that we didn't move forward, do we have a sense, were they contacted by the governor's office and kind of evaluated through the office when we sent that forward? I guess what happened with them once we passed it along? Do we know?
So far, it'd be fair to say, from the chair's perspective, it's a black hole. Okay. I do not know. I'm not contacted, nor necessarily encouraged to contact. So it's like they're bundled up into their, in this case, the three panels that we sent, the first, the eighth, and the at large. And then something happens between April 15th and June 30.
So I guess from my perspective, what I would like to see is not necessarily taking away the opportunity from the governor's office for making appointment of their own, but asking that if this committee hasn't bundled together a group of people that we recommend them to look at, that the governor's office at least will go forward and interview them so that they have that interface with the candidates that we've put forward.
That I don't know. I can say that the only governor who interviewed all candidates of all panels sent was Governor Ventura. But I can't say either Carlson or Pawlenty what their internal process has been. Janet.
Mr. Chair, just as an aside, this was a while back. I was at a breakfast for Mark Dayton, and it just so happened it was about the same timing when people were hot under the collar about the various bonuses that the chancellor had got and whatnot, and then the discussion kind of came around to, you know, who's on the Minsky Board of Trustees, and in a nutshell, you know, I kind of offered, you know, what the process was and very quickly, you know, what the flaw was, and Mark Dayton was very receptive, and I just pass that along because should he be our next governor, that there might be a better opportunity maybe to have some discussion mm-hmm. with his folks. Yep. So it's just kind of an aside.
And again, just a reminder that it won't be until 2012 mm-hmm. that we do it. So we'll have a governor that has at least a year to prepare, 15 right. months. 18 months, really, total, to prepare for the next cycle. Yes, John?
Just kind of a footnote to the discussion on that geographical issue. I don't know. I did a quick look. I don't know where all folks come from, but it certainly seemed, or I felt like the at-large position appears to me to be largely a seven-county metro position. I don't know if that's right or not, but it would be something, again, if the legislature cares to look at this, that right. you know, they could look at that and whether or not they're getting the geographical balance that they, whatever they thought geographical balance was, that would be a piece to right. to look at.
Yep.
According to staff's data that we were provided, 9 of the board members are from the metro area.
Okay.
So you're right.
Okay.
The
9
out of 12.
The challenge that we've always had here over history is getting candidates from Greater Minnesota.
Yeah.
To take a good look at it and to fill our panels. The first this year was, as you recall, particularly challenged. We only had 2 total out of 18, yeah. 1 incumbent. And you recall we were not comfortable sending the second name, so we just sent one. So it's all I can say is it's been a challenge from my time here to, and I go back at least through 2002. So, yes, other comments. Nancy?
Well, one of the things is I don't think people sometimes when they apply know the extent of the commitment that they're making. I think that's what you're referring to. And other people are kind of scared off because they do know the commitment that they're making. But we found at the universities, for example, that we're using Skype we're using a lot of different technology so that we can reach a larger audience. And that could be quite appropriate with the Board of Trustees. And I don't think it would be prohibitively expensive. In fact, it's probably much cheaper. The other question that I have is in terms of the past motion, it was legislative review. Does that mean, and then I heard you talking about the governor. I was talking about the legislature. So are we talking about both the governor and the legislature?
In the motion?
Yeah.
Motion said the legislature.
Okay.
Given that we were created by the legislature.
Okay. Does that, oh, okay, I see. So that means the governor is not involved in the process at this time. That's what I'm trying to clarify. I don't know.
John?
No, I don't know if I'm understanding your the question, but I always assume that if the legislature is hearing anything, the governor's folks are paying attention and eventually are part of the process if anything moves to the point where it gets to them. So I think they're
good.
Involved that way.
Thanks, John.
I think for that first step.
Let me go back. We promised an hour's meeting, so we've already taken the appropriate action, I think, to open the conversation. Let me just tee up one natural result of this. Would you ever be open to considering that if a governor were not to select from the panel of names that we presented, that we would do a new panel, which would extend our work significantly? And I'm not sure how that would work in terms of timing, because we do have that April 15th deadline for our names to get to the governor, and then he has 6 weeks, or she has 6 weeks to, I guess it's all going to be he for the next 4 years. He has 6 weeks to get the appointments done so that it's aligned with the fiscal year issue. So that's not an easy one to figure out. Nancy?
Mr. Chair, it is something to think about, but if we are recommending four names for each of four positions and we're advisory, I mean, I would think that there's plenty of choice there, given the fact that, I mean, when I first came on the board, I had the sense, but nobody really knows, that one party was more heavily represented than another. Now I have a feeling it's the other way, but I know it's supposed to be even, isn't it?
On the...
Us.
Oh.
Us. The advisory council. How is that decided? I mean... Let's get back to our own representation. We represent different geographic areas. It's my understanding. That's how it's. We have the.
I don't believe there's anything in the legislation that determines that this body has to go by a geographic representation.
I don't believe that. I don't remember seeing that. I think it's 12 and 12,
yep.
And it's up to the legislative appointees appointers to determine geographic balance. And it has the same kind of consideration language in it for the appointment process of us.
Okay.
And in terms of partisan identification among the representatives here, it's not been identified. So at best, guests. Other comments? John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to add in that the discussion of issues concerning the process in opening up a bit to kind of go back to the experience we had in our, you know, when we were appointing or selecting people. And I was a bit uncomfortable, not with, you know, the essence of what we decided, but I felt there was a little bit of friction between what the statute said we should be doing in terms of forwarding names, and I can't even remember exactly what the friction was, but we ended up recommending one.
That was it.
And the language in the statute I don't know if Sally has that in front of her or not.
2 to 4.
2 to 4. I knew there was, you know, my thought was that's something I think could be cleaned up because we were in a position where that was our best decision. It just didn't happen to be in the foresight of the people who wrote the language. And I think we should consider asking the House legal staff to come up with some kind of qualifier that would be simple enough, just so that we're not. I wasn't sure when I walked out how I would answer the question if someone who wasn't selected were to ask me, well, you know, why does the statute say 2 to 4 and you only did one? And I was a little bit nervous about that. And so I just think we should pursue that. I think there are probably a number of ways that could be, you know, massaged enough so that we weren't put in that position, you know, again.
I think the minutes of this meeting will have a number of the ideas that we'll put into the process when and if our formal request is granted for a review. Let me go back to, we've talked about the AFL-CIO, we've talked about the alternative process. The question that Nancy raised about incumbents, I think We've tried to say that incumbents are treated as any other candidates. The difference in incumbents is they have a 6-year track record of actually being a trustee, which may or may not work to their advantage, could work to their disadvantage. But did you have any more you wanted to say about the incumbents? There's no term limits in legislation. We've had no one go for a third term that I know of, so it sort of like self-selected at the end of 2, they're ready to go. Tim?
Well, Mike Vekage was going to be in his third term now. He did take a break in between.
Right. That's right. Yep. Any other concerns about incumbents? I think the incumbent issue could be dealt with by our own policy setting, which we also have the ability to set our own internal policies around interviews and that kind of thing.
I think it's excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a very delicate issue because people who have served as trustees have really invested an enormous amount of energy, and I would never want to be disrespectful to a trustee.
Right.
So it is going to be kind of delicate. I believe that the Regents do have a 2-year term limit.
But they have 12-year terms.
12-year terms?
They don't have a formal term limit. They just unwritten agreement that they only serve 2 6-year terms.
I'm sorry. I stand corrected. 2 6-year terms.
Well, I have the 2009 Minnesota statutes, and it's 137.0245 Regent Candidate Advisory Council, and it says a member may not serve more than 2 full
members
terms.
of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yep.
Not of the Regents.
Right.
So they can serve 2 12-year terms.
They can serve two 6-year terms.
2 6-year terms, 12 years. Well, that's the same.
But for members of the Regent Advisory Council.
Right. But
isn't an appointment to the regents a regent appointment? Isn't it a 12-year term?
It's a 6-year.
Okay, 6 years.
It's a 6-year term.
Sorry,
it's unlimited. Is that what we've established?
They have no
word on.
Legislative
oh, okay.
That they can't serve more than for the board of regents.
It should be 2 terms and no more.
This is like the old debate about term limits. American people have taken care of term limits by just voting them out. I don't remember if there's ever been an instance either at the Regents or at our trustees where someone has gone for a third term. I mean, it may be somewhat of a non-issue. Any other suggestions or comments about this last process and about getting ready for a formal request? I think that'll come. Well, we'll try to do it early in the session next year, and I'm not even sure. When do our appointments take place?
terms are up in January.
Okay.
But when the appointments take place.
It's a little bit loose. Right. Jim?
Just one other thing. If we do go back and we take a look at language again from the legislative side, so we have the geographic, we have all those pieces in there. The one that might be interesting to add is adding a history, someone with a history within the Minsky system. Board of Regents primarily come from, a lot of the members are graduates of the University of Minnesota system. Is there a benefit of looking for graduates of the Minsky system who might have a little bit more knowledge of the system in general? Just as one more thing to think about
criteria.
As we're going through it.
Okay. Can certainly look at that.
You will have to excuse me. I have to leave.
Well, we are at 2 o'clock, and so I think we've gotten a good discussion out. The minutes will recommend. Is there anything else we want to say? Yes, Janet.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Just logistically, now I'm assuming you start the process after the session starts. How is the actual process? Will we be meeting again, or?
I think what we'll do is we'll request a conversation with the House and the Senate once they're organized, and in that early time between January and March 1st is the time when they do chance to review some of this material. Then the budget takes over, right, John? Mm-hmm. So, and this year will be particularly the budget taking over. So that window of opportunity between January, after the organizational vote, we know who the chairs of the two committees are, and early March will be time when we'll try to see if we can have a conversation, and I'll request that. The reason I was asking the appointment process is I'm up for reappointment, and I was appointed once by the Senate and once by the House. None of them are left, so I don't know. My future.
We'll lobby for you.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yes, Carl?
Mr. Chairman, I was just mentioning and Tim's note about Minsky graduates.
Right.
Do we want to limit it to that, or do we want to make sure it's a graduate from any school in the country? Because people come here from all over the world. We wouldn't want to limit it to just a Minsky graduate.
No, my recommendation wasn't to exclusively have it for Minsky graduate. Just having that is one extra criteria that would be, you know, having some representation on the Minsky board as graduates of the Minsky system.
Right.
I have to go.
Yep.
I have another meeting.
Well, we're ready to, I think we're ready to adjourn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless anybody has any burning comment? Yes, Nancy?
Tim, I'm thinking about what you said, and instead of saying a graduate, I would say experience. I mean, I think one of the best board members we ever had was a community college faculty, Ivan Dusick. And so one of the things that I've been struck by, and I'll talk fast, is that trustees often say, when I was in college, and that was 40 years ago, you know, and people who have had more recent experience either as staff or faculty or whatever in the system, I agree, are more knowledgeable. I mean, the system's only 30 years old, but we're talking about, you know, when they were a graduate perhaps of Winona or something. But I would not like to limit it to somebody who was a student 40 years ago. I'd rather have somebody I'd broaden the category of Minsky experience.
The minute. Okay, let the minute show that. Okay. Motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll. I thought since we didn't have a huge quorum, we'd wait for the minutes of the meeting until the next meeting, the real meeting.
I think that's good.
Yep. Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.
All right, have a good day, everybody.
Thank you.